Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. This is Tuesday. It is the 12th of April already. You know, in that book that I was reading to you from, The Family of Dark, actually the name of the book was called Family of Light by Barbara Marciniak, but they said in the book, and I've read this before, that our perception of time is actually speeding up, and I guess that's the way it would have to be, isn't it? Because if we acknowledge that time in reality is not linear, but here in this three-dimensional realm, in this physical world, time seems to go on, and then there's past, and there's forward, and there's now, when in truth there really is only the now. But they, in that book, I don't know if you recall it, or maybe it was in a chapter other than what I was reading to you, they said that the months will be like weeks. And folks, I swear, that seems to be the way it's going, doesn't it? We're going to do something different tonight. I put in a call to John Hamill. He's with the, I can't recall, John Hamill is the gentleman who has been keeping up with and reporting on Codex Alimentarius. That's another slick little thing that seems to be lurking in the background again, that's rearing its ugly little head. So if I know John has been very busy attending meetings, etc., but if he gets a hold of us, maybe John will be coming on with us. Our spiritual message this evening, my sis read this to me. She has it on a plaque, and it's so lovely, and so I had her read it to me while I transcribed it so I could share it with you. This is something that was written by Mother Teresa, and it's titled Do It Anyway. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you're kind, people may accuse you of selfish ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you're successful, you'll win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you're honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest anyway. What you spend years building, somebody could destroy overnight. Build anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you have anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and Creator. It was never between you and them anyway. Don't you like that? Here's another little one. This is from Psalm 139. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there, your hand shall guide me, your right hand shall hold me fast. I'll tell you what we're going to talk about tonight. I wanted to acknowledge an email I got after the broadcast last night. Our guest last night was Gray, a deacon, and he's with the Minuteman Project. I was very, in case you didn't notice, I was really disappointed to find out that the Minuteman Project is planned. Of course, I'm not out there doing it, am I? I'm sitting back here talking about how wonderful it is. And there are people, real live people out there standing at the borders, a 60-mile stretch. There's 2,300 miles of border there. And according to Gray, about 3,000 illegal aliens. They're not immigrants, as Jeff Bennett called me today and we chatted. And as he pointed out, they're not illegal immigrants. Immigrants are people who immigrate through a procedure into the United States of America. They are illegal aliens. And according to our guest last night, he said that 3,000 cross those borders every single night. That's a lot. But one of the things that I wanted to acknowledge, as I said, I received an email, and the man said that I was talking over our guest a lot last night. I told him I would listen back so that I could hear what he was saying. I do know there was one place where he was talking, and I kept thinking that he was done, and I was talking over him. I apologize if I did that, but I will, and I will say this. The plan, what they hope their next step is here, folks, I don't mean to be a wet blanket, but to start a new political party, and I am not putting these people down. Evidently, they're just not well enough informed to realize that it does. I mean, every political party that I know of has been infiltrated or started by the controlled opposition. They always control their own opposition. And he said, well, but we're not going to give up hope. Well, we must never give up hope. And yet, sometimes we might take a look. And, of course, the only reason I know what I'm saying is because I've been there, done that, as far as, you know, contacting U.S. Congress and all of that stuff. But starting a new political party, I would give you my suggestion to get involved and use your time and energy trying to get a new political party going with the vote fraud that is so rampant in this country, folks. I don't know. That seems futile. And as I said, I don't like being a wet blanket. I hope that enough people keep contacting them, that project, the Minuteman Project, just continues to grow, and that they can cover more and more and more places in the border and just stand guard. I think it's magnificent what they're doing. And in case, I just want to say again, I do apologize. I'm not apologizing to Gray, of course, he's not listening. But to you, our listeners, if I was talking over him a lot, I know that I did it at one point. All right, I got a piece today. And since I wasn't able to get a hold of John Hamill in time to bring him on, I decided I want to share this with you. This is an article about the popes of Rome. Things that maybe you didn't know. Alan told us, well, it's in the book, Mystery Babylon Religion, and which is written largely from the two Babylons, which is a very text-intensive book, but that there was one pope that was a Caesar, and I was wondering if it was Louis the Caesar. I can't remember. There is a book that I read about Pope John Paul I, and it was Luciani, was that his name? Albino Luciani. He became pope. He was a pope for 33 days. That's a nice, neat little number, isn't it? I believe the man would have changed the face of this planet as we know it. I really believe that. From reading the book, I loved him. They called him the Smiling Pope, and there were so many pictures of him in the book. The book was written by a guy named David Yollop, I think. He's a British man, and he, from what I understood, well, I wrote to him and got a really lovely letter back, but the book is out of print, as it would be. But if you go to a website, you know, with some of those used books like ABE Books, In God's Name is the name of this book. And it was just beautiful. Well, it was beautiful reading about a real, honest-to-God man that we would say is Christ-like, that was actually there in the popehood, or the popery, whatever we call it, for 33 days. And as I said, there were so many pictures of him, photographs, smiling. He'd go out for a walk, and they had the guard out there, and he would stop and talk to the guards. And he was told by the members of the Curia that he could not do that. The guards bowed to him, and he told them not to bow to him. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that a departure from the pomp and circumstance of what we see? And he was going to allow birth control because he realized that in the third world country, so many of them that are Catholic, and the people are just absolutely living in poverty. Of course, they're members of the most wealthy corporation in the whole world, the Catholic Church, and yet they're living in poverty. But he was going to do that, and there would have been many changes. He didn't think the church should be wealthy. In fact, when he was a bishop, he used his own money to do things for the people in his area bishopric, or however it's called. Luciani, Albino Luciani, the smiling pope. And they killed him. They poisoned him. Because you know why? He was getting rid of the Vatican banker. That $1 billion had been laundered through the Vatican Bank. Drug money, I guess, or whatever it was, bonds, I think. He was going to get rid of that guy, and he was getting the Masons, P3, I can't remember. It's Freemasonry. It's a part of Freemasonry that is pretty much evidently controls the Vatican. And if we realize that those who call themselves Jews, and I mean the elite, and it's difficult to say them without saying Jew because that's what they call themselves. But I've been working on the book, Jewish Persecution, and chapter 16 is almost completed. And what we've done in that chapter is showed the connection between Freemasonry and these creatures, whoever they be, whomever they be, whatever they be. Anyway, I've lost my train of thought. I do that, don't I? Freemasonry. Oh, yeah. Pope John Paul I was getting rid of the Freemasons out of the Curia there. And he had inherited his Secretary of State from the Pope before him. And when he handed, that night at dinner, he handed his Secretary of State the orders of the people that he wanted transferred and let go, etc. And the man begged him not to do it. I suppose the man knew that he was going to get killed. And the next morning, one of the nuns that brought his morning coffee to him set it down by outside his door, walked by a bit later and found out that, saw that he hadn't gotten it. So she rapped lightly and went in, and he's sitting in a half-sitting position with a book in his hand and his glasses on his lap, and he's dead. And you know what they did? I don't know if they cremated him or not, but they took him away so fast there was never an autopsy, and he got buried or cremated, one or the other, before anybody could do any testing. And his birth certificate showed no known cause of his death, or excuse me, his death certificate showed no known cause. So there's a lot of crime and corruption, isn't there, folks? So this is what we're doing tonight by Mark Owen. It says Mark Owen is a freelance writer living in Toronto, Canada. I'm going to have Darren put this in our website at sweetliberty.org in the Greatest Hoax section. This says, on the evening of Saturday, April 2nd, 2005, after receiving the rite of extreme unction, Pope John Paul II passed away. At this time, his chamberlain would have gone to the papal hospital bed and asked the Bishop of Rome a question. Are you dead? There would be no reply from the Pope. The chamberlain would then pick up a silver handle and strike the Pope on the head and repeat his question, are you dead? Again, there would be no reply. The chamberlain would then thrice call out the Pope's baptismal name. He would then declare the Pope to be dead. This is the way the Church has determined papal deaths for centuries. This is the way of the world's oldest monarchy. Since 1763, the August Almanac de Gotha has been the ultimate authority on the royal houses of Europe. Listed under, quote, reigning sovereign houses, reigning sovereign houses is the Holy See. Therein is stated, the incumbent of the Holy See is considered by Christian sovereign families as the father of the family of kings, and His Holiness represents the oldest monarchy on earth. My. The triple sovereignty of the Pope person, Holy See, and Vatican City is direct, distinct in fact, and in law internationally. He is not subject to any authority on earth, the Pope. His cardinals are considered to be princes of the Church and peers of the sons of reigning monarchs. Each diocese is considered to be a royal fiefdom. The word diocese originally signified an administrative unit devised by the Emperor Diocletian, a tyrant noted for his persecution of Christians. The word diocese originally signified an administrative unit devised by the Emperor Diocletian. That's where the word diocles came, diocese, a tyrant noted for his persecution of Christians. Following are brief sketches of some of the more interesting holders of the title Vicar of Christ. It should be noted that the Latin equivalent of the Greek anti is vicarious. The Latin equivalent of the Greek anti is vicarious, from whence is derived the word vicar. Vicar? Vicar? Vicarious. Oh, wow. The Vicar of Christ is vicarious. Without a doubt, there was one pope who was completely mad. In 1896, Stephen VII set in motion the trial of his rival, the late Pope Formosus, who had been dead for 9 months. Formosus' corpse was dragged from its tomb, put on a throne in the council chamber. The corpse, wrapped in a hair shirt, was provided with counsel, who wisely remained silent, while Pope Stephen raved and screamed at it. The crime of Formosus was that he had crowned emperor one of the numerous illegitimate heirs of Charlemagne after first having performed the same office for a candidate favored by Stephen. After Stephen's rant, the corpse was stripped of its clothes, its fingers were chopped off. It was then dragged through the palace and hurled from a balcony to a howling mob below, who threw it into the Tiber. The body was later rescued by people sympathetic to Formosus and given a quiet burial. Stephen was strangled to death a few years later. Folks, think about that. I mean, the insanity, digging up a body that had been buried for 9 months holding a trial. And because the guy never spoke, he was found guilty. And so much for the infallibility of popes. I think it was around in, if I'm not mistaken, and I may be, somewhere around the 900s, that they decided that the pope was infallible. No matter what the pope did, it was right, because the pope is infallible. I'm looking for my place here. Okay, in 964, Pope Benedict V raped a young girl and absconded to Constantinople with the papal treasury, only to reappear when the money ran out. Church historian Gerbert called Benedict the most iniquitous, this is quote, the most iniquitous of all the monsters of ungodliness. The pontiff was eventually slain by a jealous husband. His corpse, bearing 100 dagger wounds, was dragged through the streets before being tossed into a cesspit. You lay down, honey. Lay down. Chill. I'm sorry. I've been, since Tessie died, for those of you who are new listeners, I had two very large, beautiful old English mastiffs, and Tessabel, the sister to Mariah, half-sister to Mariah, had a heart attack and died very quickly in February, and so I let her be with me wherever I am in the house. I know she's so lonely, and I put a blanket up by the bed upstairs, and she gets, when nighttime comes, she starts bugging me. And that's what she was just doing when I told her to go lay down. She just wanted to say, come on already. Because I don't let her go up there till I do. And she's laying over here pouting now. Because she knows I'm talking about her too. Let me get back to this. So, the Pope Benedict V in 964 raped a young girl, went to Constantinople with the papal treasury, only to return when the money ran out, and church historian Gerbert called Benedict the most iniquitous of the monsters of ungodliness. And then the pontiff was eventually slain by a jealous husband. His corpse, bearing 100 dagger wounds, was dragged through the streets before being tossed into a cesspit. You know, when you read this kind of stuff, it certainly makes you wonder, doesn't it, at the audacity of calling this head of the Catholic Church, you know, the vicar for Christ on earth. What an insult to Jesus. What an insult. And isn't it amazing that this, quote, religion, with all of its ridiculous, saying 15 Hail Marys and 18 Our Fathers, and, you know, there's a, your sins can be forgiven by doing that if you go to confession. You know, it's so simple. Jesus said that by your fruits, excuse me, as we sow, so shall we reap. That's all there is to it. And there is no body that is going to, quote, be able to forgive our sins. As we sow, so shall we reap. But look at the minds that this Catholic Church has controlled, and intelligent people, really intelligent people who believe with all their heart that everything their church tells them is true, including the fact that when they take communion, they're drinking Jesus' blood and eating Jesus' flesh. That is called cannibalism. Any way you look at it, any way you cut it, it is called cannibalism, folks. And there is a really excellent book, if any of you are interested. I don't know where you get it, but you could probably do a search. Check out your library. It's called 50 Years in the Church of Rome. And I do not recall the author. It was a priest, a Catholic priest. And boy, I'll tell you, he really told. But that made me think of him because it was so hard for him as a young, in, you know, whatever they are before they become a priest, to try to make himself believe that those words they said turned that wafer and that wine into actual blood and actual flesh. And it is total mind control, because eventually he told himself that he believed it. That was sort of like Winston Smith, wasn't it, in 1984, after they tortured him enough. Oh, yes, he said that, you know, those three fingers he was looking at were four, and actually believed it. All right, we'll go on with this. In October of 1032, the papal mitre, that's that fish head they wear, the Pope wears on his head, that's, you know, after that god of the sea. Was it Poseidon? Whatever. The fish god. In 1032, the papal mitre was purchased for the 11-year-old Benedict IX. Upon reaching his 14th year, a chronicler wrote that Benedict had already surpassed in wantonness and profligacy all who had preceded him. He often had to leave Rome in a hurry. Gregory VII was a master forger, surpassing even the great fraud known as the Donation of Constantine, the document that created the papal states. Gregory had an entire school of forgers turning out document after document bearing the papal seal, and these documents were later systematized in the mid-1100s in Bologna by Gratian, a Benedictine monk. He called his work the Decretum, or Code of Canon Law. They were forgeries, folks. It was peppered throughout with several centuries of forgeries, along with Gratian's own fictional additions. Gregory also formalized the celibacy doctrine in order to curtail the many gifts of church lands being given away to all of the illegitimate children of priests and bishops. According to Catholic historian Peter de Rosa in his book Vicars of Christ, he said, quote, popes had mistresses as young as 15 years of age. They were guilty of incest and sexual perversions of every sort. They had innumerable children, were murdered in the very act of adultery, in the old Catholic phrase, why be holier than the Pope? Another interesting figure was Alexander VI, formerly Rodrigo Borgia. He reigned from 1492 to 1503. Alexander committed his first murder at the age of 12. Upon assuming the papal mitre, he cried, I am Pope, Vicar of Christ. In his decline and fall, Gibbon referred to Alexander as the Tiberius of Rome. Like his predecessor, Innocent VIII, Alexander sired many children. He baptized them personally and officiated at their weddings in the Vatican. He had 10 known legitimate children, illegitimate, including the notorious Caesar and Lucretia Borgia, by his favorite mistress, Venosa Cantanai or something. When she faded, Borgia took the 15-year-old Julia Farnese. She obtained a cardinal's red hat for her brother, who later became Paul III. I'll read that last line again. We're going to be right back here. Stay with us, folks.
years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dough.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
We're back with you, folks. I'm sorry for that little blank spot there. I hope you took my address down. I'll give it to you one more time in case you didn't get it, in case you might like to help keep this broadcast on the air. Hello there.
Hi, is this Jackie Petrou?
It sure is. Who is this?
Tracy, and I was listening to your program.
Hi, Tracy.
And you're currently on the air, correct?
And so are you, my dear.
Well, your comment there, statements about the book titled 50 Years in the Church of Rome.
Yeah.
The author of that book is Charles Chiniquay.
Oh, Chiniquay, yes.
And he also, if you read his other book, has another one that's very dynamite on the subject matter of the corruption within the Catholic religion and the church.
Uh-huh.
Is a book titled The Priest, The Woman, and The Confession. And he stated in his book, 50 Years in the Church of Rome, quoting him, he said, "I come fearlessly today before the American people to say and prove that the Jesuits assassinated President Abraham Lincoln."
Gosh, I don't remember that.
See, Lincoln and he were very close friends.
Oh.
In fact, Lincoln defended Chiniquay from the church.
He was a Canadian, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I remember, Tracy, do you know where people can get those books?
Gosh, it's been a while. I haven't read mine years ago. I have to look in. I'm out on the road.
Oh, are you? Are you calling from the road?
Well, I mean, out in the country. I'm not.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
And I'm out working away from my abode.
Okay. I remember when he was talking, Chiniquay was talking about the people. You know how they have to pay for the prayers for the priest to pray their loved ones out of purgatory. And he did the logistics, the figures, and it was hundreds and it was millions and millions of dollars that came flowing in, and those prayers never got said because there were too many of them.
Oh, no, the whole thing is a con game on public figures. All organized religion is bad.
All organized religion, I have to agree with that.
Yeah.
Tracy, thank you.
It's so easy to deceive people, you know, and we're all deceived somewhere that it could be.
Oh, you know, the thing is, the more we learn, the more we realize we don't know, isn't it, Tracy?
That's what's true. When the person starts looking for the truth, then they realize how little we really do know.
Yeah, and it humbles you, doesn't it, my dear?
Well, yes, that's true.
Yes.
In one other statement in reference to his book, in Chiniquay's book, he said that the Catholic Confession and the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, cannot coexist on the same soil. One must go down.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the Confession. And, you know, the sad thing about that, and it had never occurred to me, but, well, I've never done that, but, you know, gone to confession, but according to Chiniquay, they actually had to ask real personal questions, and especially young girls that went in, and they would ask the young girls, have you had any nasty or lewd thoughts? And these young girls were innocent. And then the priests would say, well, have you ever da-da-da-da-da? And so what they were doing was actually corrupting the minds of these innocent little girls.
Absolutely. That's organized religion for you.
Yeah.
Some are just worse than others, but they're all deceiving the masses.
Well, let's hope. And let's...
There's a brighter light coming.
Yes, Tracy, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your call tonight.
You bet. And if I find it, I'll look up and see if I can get a source on those books sometime and give you a call.
That's cool. Thanks, Tracy.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, honey. For any of you listening who are Catholic, this is not to denigrate or put you down. But, you know, folks, just like Tracy said, all organized religions. There's no place you'll find in the Bible where Jesus said, I came here to start a religion. And what I have come to realize is, well, Alan told us this a long time ago, back in 98, that there is actual evidence on the Isle of Crete, on the island of Crete, that the priesthood, the international priesthood, sat there and wrote all the religions for all the people around the world. And then they set off, each into their own direction, to preach a particular religion. You know, just like Jehovah in the Old Testament, they refer to these itinerant priests who wandered into that area. Nobody really seems to know where they came from. The priests, you know, bringing the Jehovah doctrine with them. And according to what I have read, the people back at that time had begun to let go, if you would, of all of their multiple gods and realize that there is one creator. And there was an oral tradition back then. And then these itinerant priests wandered in, bringing the Jehovah doctrine with them. And there was a small tribe of people there that got hooked into it. And so, therefore, the Holy Bible, the Holy Christian Bible, 4/5 of it is that Old Testament. 4/5. And about 10% of all that whole huge book is the Gospels that actually quote Jesus, around whom the religion called Christianity allegedly was developed. And they've just totally forgotten about Jesus. The churches have, the people who go to the churches, they believe everything their church tells them. And folks, you know what? Really, all we have to do is to begin to look within us. Look within us and ask. Ask for truth. Ask for understanding. And it will come. But we have to want it. And we have to be able to be willing to give up a lot of things that we believed. Like, for me, I know I've said this before, Christmas. That was the toughest one. I loved Christmas. I loved everything in my heart that it stood for. And when I found out that Christmas was the celebration of the Saturnalia, the Festival of Lights, and maybe that, I'm not saying that was a wicked festival. It was a festival that was being celebrated because now the sun is going to be out longer. It's the ending of the winter time and etc. I'm not saying it was evil, but it certainly, we certainly have been fooled and bemused, haven't we? All of us. So I'll get back to this reading here. He was talking about Gregory VII, who was the master forger, And, oh, no, excuse me, I'm way beyond that. Oh, I know what it was. It was Borgia. When his mistress faded, it says, Borgia took the 15-year-old Julia Farmese as his mistress, and she, the mistress of this pope, got a cardinal's red hat for her brother, who later became Pope Paul III. Alexander was followed by Julius II, who purchased the papacy with his own private fortune. He didn't even pretend to be a Christian. A notorious womanizer who sired any number of bastards, Julius was so eaten away with syphilis, he couldn't even expose his foot to be kissed. Isn't that amazing? And in the Old Testament, at least the story that we're told, people weren't kissing Jesus' feet. He was washing their feet, wasn't he? Under Leo the X, and I'm wondering if that's the one that Alan said was Leo the Khazar, or whatever, 1521, Leo the X cursed and excommunicated Martin Luther. Specific prices were enumerated by the Roman Chancery for every imaginable crime. For instance, a deacon accused of murder could be absolved for 20 crowns. Once pardoned, the deacon could not be prosecuted by civil authorities. 200 years earlier, Pope John the 22nd, had done much the same thing, setting prices for crimes ranging from incest to sodomy. Jeez. During his pontificate, Innocent VIII, from 1484 to 1492, granted a 20-year, listen to this, butter-brief indulgence to persons who met his price. For a sum, one could purchase the privilege of eating favorite dishes during Lent. Just give the Pope or the priest some money. And that's all it takes. In the book, Mystery Babylon Religion, they said that this paying indulgences, which we'll be reading about in a minute, that they literally had to rake the money up that was brought in. Let me go on here. Pope Sixtus IV charged Roman brothels a church tax. Pope Sixtus IV charged Roman brothels a church tax. According to historian Will Durant, in 1490 there were 6,800 registered prostitutes in Rome. Pius II declared that Rome was the only city run by bastards, and those were the sons of popes and cardinals. Hello, you're on the air.
Jackie?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, this is Ed Fox in Texas, South Texas.
Hi, Ed.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I've talked to you in a whole long time. Listen,
I haven't heard
you in your speaking there, but I only had a minute here. I wanted to tell you that there's two. In fact, I agree with you totally that all of religion is totally been whitewashed.
But that doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater,
no,
does it?
No, we don't.
Thank you.
Here's a couple of facts for you that you can check out, and it's real easy to prove it. The letter J in the English language,
yeah,
did not come into existence except 500 years ago. So, go back to the 1611.
Would Jackie have been Yackie?
It would have been Yackie or Icky. One of the two.
probably Yackie.
Yackie, okay. But if you look at the 1611 original copy of the King James Version,
uh-huh,
you'll notice in there is no J. They're all I's and Y's.
Uh-huh.
So, that means that any word that is used in our current day Bible, that's left of the Bible, that is
Right.
The word Jesus is not correct.
Right.
Not only that, and then there's the, when you think about it, the Father's name has been taken out of the Bible. His name was Yahweh, YHWH, and that was his original name.
Yahweh.
Yeah, Yahweh. Or
I know.
They two letters.
YHVH is how they came up with Jehovah.
Yeah, that's where Jehovah came from, but it's a fake too, because.
Well then, may I ask you a question, Ed?
Uh-huh.
Please, honey. Okay, so now you're saying that Jehovah is not creator, but Yahweh is creator.
Exactly.
Okay, now the thing I would like you to consider is take the name Yahweh, put it in the Bible where Jehovah is, and you look at all the killing, all the slaughter, all the bloodshed, and then ask within yourself, is that my loving Father?
Is he my loving Father?
Yes.
Sure.
Is that love?
Well, there's more to it than that, Jackie. There's a whole lot more to the scripture than what meets the eye. You have to understand.
Okay.
For example, one of the things that people don't realize is that he has a chosen people. And those chosen people he was protecting during that part of that era of time.
And now they rejected him, from my understanding, or the lost tribes are really us. We're really the chosen, the white Anglo.
The chosen were direct descendants of
all right,
Adam.
Let me ask you this, Ed.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Okay. He says in there, it is stated in the Bible, that his chosen people are going to rule the world, and that kings are going to bow to their feet. Do you want to rule the world? I mean, didn't Jesus tell us not to store up our treasure here on earth? That his kingdom is not of this world, Ed? Why would anybody want to rule the earth?
Well, it's just the word rule meant to dominate. In other words,
all right, fine, dominate.
His children to dominate rather than, remember who else was on the earth at the time. The people who were on the earth was the hybrid between the devil and the human. The ones that they mixed with, remember? They were not human. They were not Yahweh's creation.
Okay.
They were the devil's creation. So
okay.
The people that he wiped out, the ones he wiped out were the ones that were not his creation. You understand?
I think when you called in, Ed, that you said that you agreed with Tracy that organized religions are all phony.
Right.
And you don't believe then that Christianity and all of that symbolic stuff in the Old Testament, which is their code for the esoteric, you don't believe that is, you think that's different.
Yeah,
that isn't organized religion. Is that what you're saying, Ed?
No. Religion is so far away from what's true that I've even talked to pastors and tried to wake them up to some of the truth, and they I emailed one time and was trying to explain something to him, and he just got really hostile with me and told me to take him off his email list, and I was just trying to help him as a brother.
Sure.
To show him the truth so he would not be lying to the people.
And Ed,
about certain things.
Do you get your information from outside sources, or is that from your meditation, asking, praying?
It's through meditation, but it's also through other sources also. I don't get mine from the church because I don't even go to church because I'm afraid that I will have my mind re-brainwashed.
Oh.
So I'm afraid to go there,
except I will
go there to try to help other people.
Yeah.
I have gone to churches to try to find those who are really lost and really want to know the truth, especially those who sometimes are confused, like I was many years ago when I was a kid. You know, my dad, I'll say this, the preacher would teach, for example, that the Jews were the chosen people of God. Well, I would come home and I would ask my dad, I'd say, you know, because I had a little bit of sense at that around even, to know that, you know, they were pretty corrupt people. And I would ask my dad, I'd say, well, Dad, you know, the preacher says that they're chosen, but when you look at their record is horrible. It's abysmal.
Well, you know what, though? They're fulfilling it just as it is in the Old Testament. Do you know in there he says to his special chosen people that you will loan to nations and borrow from none. Now, who's doing that, Ed? Who's doing
that? It's upside down, though, Jackie. It's not. That was a long time ago. We were supposed to be in control, but we have failed.
Okay.
Just like we failed many times, if you look in the Old Testament, many times. Just look at one passage, for example, what's the name of Ezra. Look at 9 and 10, Ezra. And if you'll read that passage, see how bad they failed. And even Ezra himself said, God, we have sinned so much that you probably won't save a remnant out of it. You'll probably destroy it all.
Well, you know, if we would go back into the Gospels and just read, and I'm not saying that I understand everything that's in there that is attributed to Jesus, but there's some very simple, as you sow, so shall you reap. Nobody is going to save us from our sins other than ourselves, Ed. It's choices we make. Jesus said it, that as we sow, so also shall we reap. Now, that is an immutable law of creation.
Absolutely. It's a law. It's the law of God.
So it isn't that, quote, God is going to save us. We are already one with our Father. Jesus said that. We've just lost our way.
Right. And also, on top of that, not only have we lost our way, but we forgot who we are.
Exactly.
That's the key to it all.
Exactly. Ed, thank you for your call, darling.
Okay. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Okay, folks. Let me get on with this. Actually, I was thinking I was going to run out of something to do tonight, but that doesn't happen, does it? I'll go on with this about the popes. Pope, okay, the church, the brothels. The iniquity of the various popes has filled many books, and one has to wonder if the church has been cursed from the very beginning. After all, Constantine leveled the stadium of Caligula and the temple of Apollo and used the stones and marble from them to erect the original Basilica of Peter. Could he have been engaging in an act of sympathetic magic, as some have alleged? Constantine's choice of building materials might account for the observation made in Rome by Martin Luther centuries later, who declared, "If there is a hell, Rome is built over it. It is an abyss from whence issues every kind of sin." Very brief mention should be made of the staggering scale of the Inquisition. In his History of the Inquisition, Canon Llorente, who was Secretary of the Inquisition in Madrid from 1790 to 92, estimated the number of condemned in Spain alone to have exceeded 3 million, with 300,000 burned at the stake. A Catholic historian comments on the events leading up to the suppression of the Spanish Inquisition. When Napoleon conquered Spain in 1808, a Polish officer in his army, Colonel Lemanowski, reported that the Dominicans in charge of the Inquisition blockaded themselves in their monastery in Madrid. When Lemanowski's troops forced an entry, the inquisitors denied the existence of any torture chambers. The soldiers searched the monastery and discovered them under the floors. The chambers were full of prisoners, all naked, many insane. The French troops, used to cruelty and blood, couldn't stomach the sight. They emptied the torture chambers, laid gunpowder to the monastery, and blew the place up. Rome, and that's the end of that quote, Rome was truly drunk with the martyrs' blood. And the papacy isn't faring much better in our modern age and would appear to be in serious decline, if not in outright defeat. Well, you know what I think, folks? I don't know that this is true, But as I have been working and writing over the last 3 years on the book Jewish Persecution, it has come to me that Christianity, the church, the Christian church, was established to be destroyed. When in the future, all of the lies and all of the hypocrisy would come out. And this is the one thing that I mentioned to Ed as we were talking. That doesn't mean we're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It doesn't mean we're going to say to hell with it all. It's all a big lie. Maybe we're going to rejoice that we are discovering the truth, that the lies are being revealed and the truth is being known, and give thanks for that. And know those simple little statements that Jesus made, if we lived by that, when they asked him what was the greatest commandment, now first of all, those Ten Commandments, they didn't come from Moses on a mountain. They came from the Egyptian Book of the Dead or the Hammurabi Code, whatever. But he said the greatest commandment is this: to love your Father, Creator, with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Isn't that, I mean, it is so simple. I know it isn't easy. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. I have a bracelet that Amber, my little granddaughter, put on my arm. It must be 5 or 6 years ago. And it's one of those cloth things. And it has the initials on it, for what would Jesus do? And it's a wonderful thing to ask ourselves when we're in the midst of... I just heard a click. Oh, I'm hearing music. Okay. Well, folks, we're out of our time here tonight. We'll be back with you tomorrow night. And if John Hamill gets in touch with me, maybe John will be with us tomorrow night. Other than that, we'll find out what's coming tomorrow night. Tomorrow night. Thank you for being here. God bless you. Good night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petru's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily...